a Wingnut Films production, co-produced with Fontana Film Production GmbH, in association with the New Zealand Film Commission. For Jim.
Christchurch, New Zealand city of the plains. Here, when spring comes to Canterbury, daffodils bloom gay and golden in the woodland of Hagley Park.
Old film of trams travelling down a main street.
Nearby are tall buildings, busy streets, and the heart of the city, Cathedral Square. Canterbury University College, weathered grey stone buildings, shattered cloisters. It was here Lord Rutherford began a great career. The girls' high school stands in Cranmer Square. And not far away are the broad acres of Hagley Park, with playing fields for many sports.
Men playing cricket, then rowing.
In spring, summer and autumn, Christchurch gardens are gay and colourful. Yes, Christchurch, New Zealand's city of the plains.
Two girls are running through woods, their feet squelching through thick mud. Their shins are covered in blood. Now black and white film of happy girls running on a ferry. Back to the girls in the woods, then the girls on the boat, heading towards a couple with their back to them. A woman comes running out of her house and heads towards the screaming girls. They're both covered in blood.
It's Mummy! She's terribly hurt!
During 1953 and 1954, Pauline Yvonne Parker kept diaries recording her friendship with Juliet Marion Hume. This is their story. All diary entries are in Pauline's own words. Heavenly creatures. Schoolgirls in uniform walking over the school emblem on a marble floor. Starring Sarah Pierce, Diana Kent, Clive Merrison and Simon O'Connor. The girls file out through the school grounds, walking two apiece along a narrow path. And introducing Kate Winslet as Juliet. And introducing Melanie Linsky as Pauline. The girls file into an old school building under the watchful eye of a stern schoolmistress wearing a black gown and spectacles. Now a modest annex with a bicycle propped up against the front wall and a red door. The door opens and a girl, Pauline, steps out, doing up the suspenders on her stockings underneath her school uniform. She hops over a fence and mingles in with the other girls parking their bicycles in a shed. Now a grey car driving along a sunny street. Pauline, who has messy dark hair, makes her way up some steps. She makes her way along a crowded corridor, smiling at the girls greeting her. The girls are all gathered together under the vaulted ceiling of the school hall. Pauline standing amongst the girls, scowling and not singing. All the schoolmistresses are singing along heartily. The stern one with spectacles, Mrs. Stewart, catches Pauline not singing and flashes her a look. Pauline reluctantly joins in.
Sit.
The grey car pulls up outside the school building. A young girl gets out and stares up at it. Her father comes round to escort her inside. Christchurch Girls High School, 1952.
The imperfect subjunctive, like the imperfect indicative, indicates action in the past. Il voulait que lui donne de l'argent. Translate, somebody. Quickly.
He wanted her to give him some money.
Put up your hand. I will not have girls talking out of turn in my class.
Good morning, girls.
Good morning, Miss Stewart.
Sit. Miss Waller, class, this is Juliet Hume.
A girl with a smug expression enters.
Juliet is joining us from St. Margaret. And prior to that, you spent some time at Queenswood in the Hawke's Bay.
I am actually from England, Miss Stewart.
Of course. Juliet's father is Dr. Hume, rector of Canterbury College. Juliet has travelled all over the world. I'm sure she's very eager to share her impressions of exotic lands across the seas with the girls of 3A. Well, I'll leave you to it, Miss Waller. Juliet?
You can sit over here, Juliet.
Pauline goes back to her drawings of horses.
We use French names in this class. You can choose your own. Now, irregular verbs in the present subjunctive. Je doute qu'il vienne.
Excuse me, Miss Waller, you've made a mistake. Je doute qu'il vienne is, in fact, the spoken subjunctive.
It is customary to stand when addressing a teacher. Antoinette.
You should have written va.
Oh. I must have copied it incorrectly from my notes.
You don't need to apologize, Miss Waller. I found it frightfully difficult myself until I got the hang of it.
Thank you, Juliet. Open your textbook to page 17.
Juliet sits down and opens her book. Pauline smiles to herself.
Right, I thought we'd do some life drawing today, so why don't you pair off into twos and decide who wants to model and who wants to draw?
The art teacher turns to Juliet.
Oh, Juliet, you haven't got a partner.
Oh, that's all right, Mrs. Collins. I'm sure I can manage without one.
Pauline, are you with anybody? Good. You can come up here and pair up with Juliet.
Now, half the girls are striking dramatic poses while the other half draw them. Only Pauline sits scowling with her arms crossed.
You might want to change the colour, make it a bit darker. Oh, that's very nice, Joan. Good heavens, Juliet! What on earth is this?
St. George and the Dragon.
But where's Pauline?
Oh, I haven't gotten around to drawing her yet. I was going to pop her on a rock, but I seem to have run out of room. Sorry. I don't know if you've noticed, Mrs. Collins, but I've actually drawn St. George in the likeness of the world's greatest tenor, Mario Lanza.
Yes, I know. It's very clever, Juliet. But when I set you a topic, I expect you to follow it. Now put that down and start again.
Juliet sticks her tongue out at her. Pauline peers round her easel.
I think your drawing's fantastic.
Juliet smiles. Now in a house across town...
Ooh, mackerel. Well, we'll have them for lunch tomorrow.
Oh, let's have them now. Oh, they're fresh. Mm-hmm. Hey, Nora?
Well, I think you'll find out Mr. Bayliss isn't too keen on seafood. And I've got lamb chops in the refrigerator.
Excuse me. Would you mind if I put my new long-playing record on?
You're partial to a nice bit of mackerel, aren't you, Steve?
Oh, well, actually, I'm not much of a fish man, Mr. Reaper.
Oh, you have been splashing out.
Oh, it's all right. I've got my board money.
Pauline.
Hello.
Well, tell us, how'd you go?
Got an A, Mum.
Oh. No, don't worry about it now. We'll sort it out after dinner. You go and put your record on.
Doris Day.
Oh, I think she's really talented.
Pauline's put on a Mario Lanza record.
Gotta be quick in this house, mate.
Pauline smiles, enraptured by the music.
This yearning, this need that you and you alone.
Hey, isn't it that famous Irish singer, Murray O'Lanza?
He's Italian, Dad. The world's greatest tenor.
The dreams that you inspire.
She loses herself in the music again.
With every sweet desire.
Mr. Reaper playfully sings along to a mackerel, holding it up to his face and shaking it dramatically.
Stop it!
This is all I need to see.
You're spoiling it!
Pauline pushes him back into the kitchen.
Go away!
Now an outside gym class.
And left, right, and left, and right, and left.
Pauline and Juliet are both sitting out on a bench. Juliet comes over to Pauline.
Can I have another look?
Reluctantly, Pauline puts down what she's doing and rolls down one stocking to reveal a livid scar running all the way down her shin.
That's so impressive. Can I touch it?
Pauline nods and Juliet puts one finger on the scar.
They're on my lungs. I spent months in bed during the war, ravaged by respiratory illness. Mummy and Daddy sent me to the Bahamas to recuperate. I didn't see them for 5 years. But we're together now, and Mummy's promised they'll never leave me again.
I spent ages in hospital too, with my leg. I had to have all these operations. Osteomyelitis turns your bones to chalk. Took them 2 years to drain all the muck out.
Cheer up. All the best people have bad chests and bone diseases. It's all frightfully romantic.
Now Pauline's cycling along a country road. She rides through the dappled shade of an avenue of trees. In a satchel on the front of her bicycle is her Mario Lanza record. Pauline comes to a stop in front of a magnificent house and stares at it in awe. Juliet, standing on a wooden bridge in a long dress and chiffon shawl, scattering flower petals and twirling romantically.
Oh, hi, Paul!
A young boy comes over and hits her with a sword. Pauline jumps off her bicycle and races after the boy. He crosses another wooden bridge with the two girls in hot pursuit.
Faster! Come on!
Juliet hares through the trees, with Pauline struggling to keep up behind her. They plunge into more undergrowth. Then Juliet stops. The boy jumps out on Pauline.
Oh, God, Johnsy! Johnsy, stop it! Go away. We're not playing anymore. Go on, bugger off.
She helps Pauline up.
Oh, sorry. Oh, God!
Her record's broken.
I'm so sorry.
Doesn't matter.
Of course it matters! Mario!
Dr. Henry Hume sniffs, then pulls a wet brown packet out from down the side of his armchair.
What on earth are these?
They're egg and salmon sandwiches, and I gave them to you several days ago.
Oh. Yeah, I thought I could smell sulfur.
God, Henry. You're hopeless. Can't be trusted with anything as simple as lunch.
Mother!
Oh, hello.
Mother, Jonty broke Paul's record.
Oh, dear.
We must buy her another one.
Would you like a cup of tea, Paul?
No, thank you.
Well, Juliet's told us all about you. I hear you're very fond of opera.
Now, which one should we play?
Juliet, your father's trying to study.
Daddy can study while we're playing records.
Why don't you go back outside? I'll be finished soon.
Juliet puts on a record. As Henry tries to get up out of his armchair, she rushes past, knocking him back into it. She grabs Pauline and starts twirling her round the room.
There's a song in the air.
While the girls play netball at school, Pauline's reading Biggles to Juliet. Now they're spreading their arms and running like aeroplanes across the mammoth lawn behind Juliet's house.
He won't think that I am just a fool.
At supper with the family, Pauline copies Diana Hume as she dabs her mouth with a serviette.
Mio, does she not have a dainty bray? She listens.
Now the two girls are fashioning horses and figures out of modelling clay.
She'd love to sing it too if only she knew the way, but try as she may.
They rush past Henry on the driveway, then burst excitedly out of the cinema. Juliet's in such high spirit, she plants a kiss on the cheek of a surprised tramp. Now they're riding their bicycles down a country lane, throwing their heads back with laughter.
You're the one for me. There's a
line. Pauline swerves into the bushes to avoid an oncoming car and falls off her bicycle. Pauline goes limp.
Paul!
You've been eating onions!
You toad!
Juliet chases her through the woods, ripping off her cardigan. As they come to a clearing, Pauline takes off her shirt as well. They run through the trees in their underwear, cavorting and skipping around. A man tips his hat at them.
But all that my darling can scream is yours.
They run off and fall onto the ground together, laughing. Then they put their arms around each other and peck each other on the lips.
There's a mosquito, but so sweet like my Chiquita, you're the one for me. Hooray!
Pauline's riding through the dark on her bicycle, her headlamp shining in the pitch black. Now in the grounds of Juliet's house, the two of them are busy cutting out photos of movie stars from magazines by candlelight.
Oh, I wish James Mason would do a religious picture. He'd be perfect as Jesus.
Daddy says the Bible's a load of bunkum.
But we're all going to heaven.
I'm not. I'm going to the fourth world.
It's sort of like heaven.
Only better, because there aren't any Christians. It's an absolute paradise of music, art, and pure enjoyment. James will be there, and Mario. Only they'll be saints. Oh,
Saint Mario. to be known as he.
She places his photo by the candles.
He. Him. Him. This. This.
She props up another photo by the candles.
That. That.
Pauline sets down another photo.
It's absolutely not Orson Welles! Ah, the most hideous man alive!
Juliet takes Pauline's hands.
We give praise to the saints. Saints.
A short distance away, the photo of Orson Welles lies on the surface of the stream, then gets washed over the weir into the swirling waters.
Oh, wonderful, Mum!
I've got myself a pair of socks.
Oh, Wendy. Oh.
Oh, thanks.
From Dad.
Pauline opens up a 1953 handy diary.
Mario Lanza! Oh, thanks, Yvonne.
Hope it's all right. It's from Whitcomb and Tombs.
Later, she opens the diary to the 1st of January and starts to write.
I decided that my New Year's resolution is to be more lenient with others.
Pikelets? Yum!
Aren't you going out?
Not until 2:30.
This is a private function. Go away!
She pushes Steve out.
No, oh, come on. Come
on, Drew. Look who I found.
It's Juliet.
Hello, Juliet.
Hello, Mrs. Reaper.
Juliet holds out her hand and Mrs. Reaper shakes it a little uncertainly.
It's so nice to meet you.
Pauline smiles nervously.
And so in a blazing fury, Charles runs Lancelot Trelawney through with his sword, leaving Deborah free to accept Charles's proposal of marriage.
Mr. and Mrs. Reaper exchange uneasy glances.
I've heard your mother on 3YA. The women's session has lots of lively debate.
Well, actually, Mummy's left that programme now. She's far too busy with the Marriage Guidance Council.
They sound like a queer mob.
Dad!
I wouldn't want my private business being discussed with a complete stranger.
Oh, no, Mummy's awfully good at it. She has deep discussions with unhappy couples and persuades them to give it another go. In 2 years, she's only had 4 divorces. She should really be working for the UN.
My wife's blaming me. Says it's all my fault.
And how do you feel about that, Mr. Perry?
Please, call me Bill. I don't know what went wrong. My wife feels that...
No. Let's talk about your feelings, Bill.
Mummy's got a special technique called deep therapy.
What's that?
I'm not sure, but it's proving to be very popular.
Mm. Eat up, Yvonne.
That's my middle name.
Yvonne tells us you're good at making models.
I'd or anything to do with the arts.
Oh, we're pretty handy with the old model making too, eh? I've never cottoned on to plasticine like you girls, but I enjoy making anything out of wood.
Oh. Are you a carpenter, Mr. Reaper?
I work at Dennis Brothers, fish supply.
He's the manager.
This is the dining room. Do excuse us. Breakfast is between 7 and 9. The bedrooms are small, but they're very clean and comfortable.
Pauline's looking mortified.
This story of yours. Perhaps the school newspaper will print it when it's finished.
Actually, Mr. Reaper, it's a novel, and we'll be sending it to New York.
That's where all the big publishing houses are based.
Is that a fact? You'd better put my name down for an advance copy.
Juliet and Pauline exchange a secret smile.
We have decided how sad it is for other people, that they cannot appreciate our genius. But we hope the book will help them to do so a little, though no one could fully appreciate us.
Port Levy, Easter 1953. The girls are in bathing costumes running along a wooden pier. At the end, Juliet stops and clings onto a wooden post, but Pauline leaps straight in. A series of black and white photos of the girls with Juliet's parents having fun on the beach. Now they've built an elaborate sandcastle.
Charles clutches his wounded shoulder as he gallops into the courtyard. Deborah awaits his return in their private boudoir at the very top of the tower. He smells her scent from 50 paces and urges his speed onward. He flings open the door and lodges himself with the bed, ravishing her. Oh, God, yes! I bet she gets up the duff on their first night together.
What's up the duff?
Something you wouldn't understand.
Tell me! I'm almost here!
Straight and a half and incredibly stupid!
Diana's brushing Pauline's hair.
Mummy, Paul and I have decided that Charles and Deborah are going to have a baby, an heir to the throne of Borovnia.
What a splendid idea.
We're calling him Diello.
Well, that's a good dramatic name.
Paul thought it up.
Aren't you clever? There. All done.
Juliet touches Pauline's hair. Then they hold hands.
Hilda, can't find that letter from the High Commission.
They want our passport numbers.
Are you going abroad, Daddy?
Your father's attending a university conference in England, darling.
We'll only be gone for a few weeks.
You're not going, are you, Mummy?
Well, yes, I thought I might. It's a long time for your father and I to be apart.
But I should go too. Darling, you've got school. You've only just settled in.
Who's coming to the shops?
Me, I'm coming!
Some cigarettes.
Put on your shoes, Jonathan!
Juliet looks devastated. Now she's running over the peak of a hill, sobbing her heart out.
Jolie! Jolie!
Pauline finds her in a crumpled heap. She hugs her tightly. Juliet screws her eyes tightly shut, then opens them.
Look, Paul!
What?
Look!
What?
Oh, it's so beautiful.
What?
Oh, it's so pretty flat. Oh.
Juliet stands up, looking giddy. Pauline takes her hand and stands up. Then Juliet puts her arm round her. The hills morph into a beautiful landscaped garden. The girls run around a pond and then onwards across the manicured lawn. Two white unicorns. Juliet flings her arms around Pauline and they hug tightly. Now they're chasing enormous butterflies.
Today, Juliet and I discovered the key to the fourth world. We have headed in our position for about 6 months. But we only realized it on the day of the death of Christ. We saw a gateway through the clouds. Everything was full of peace and bliss. We then realized we had the key. We have an extra part of our brain which can appreciate the fourth world. Only about 10 people have it. On 2 days every year, we may use the key and look into that beautiful world which we have been lucky enough to be allowed to know of on this day of finding the key to the way through the clouds.
Horse! It's coming!
Juliet's pretending to give birth. Pauline finally delivers her of a red cushion.
It's a boy!
Deborah,
we have a son and heir.
I shall call him Diello.
You're such an incredible woman.
I couldn't have done it without you, Charles.
In class...
The Empress Deborah has the most enormous difficulty fending off her husband, who tries to have his way with her morning, noon and night.
Thank you, Juliet.
However, the Queen's biggest problem is her renegade child Diello, who has proven to be an uncontrollable little blighter who slaughters his nannies whenever the fancy takes him.
That's enough, Juliet. I suppose this is your idea of a joke.
No, Mrs. Stevens.
I suppose you think it witty and clever to mock the royal family, to poke fun at the Queen and the Empire with this rubbish.
It's not rubbish.
Sit down, Pauline.
I really don't understand why you are so upset, Mrs. Stevens. I merely wrote an essay on the royal family as requested.
It doesn't say it has to be the Windsors.
Sit down! A girl like you should be setting an example. Your seat.
Juliet pulls a funny face at Pauline and sits down, coughing.
Stop it, Juliet!
She splatters the page of her exercise book with blood.
Mrs. Hume told me they had found out today that Juliet has tuberculosis on one lung. Poor Julieta. I nearly fainted when I heard. I had a terrible job not to cry. I spent a wretched night. It would be wonderful if I could get tuberculosis too.
Come on, sit up.
I'm not hungry.
Oh, Yvonne, you've got to eat. You hardly ate any dinner last night. Now, come on. I'm not having you falling ill.
I just want to be on my own for a while.
Well, you may have forgotten that you were once a very sick little girl. But I haven't.
She hands her a forkful of scrambled egg.
Do you think Juliet could stay here while her parents are away?
Juliet's infectious. She'll be going to the hospital.
But she'll have no one to look after her.
Well, her parents won't be going overseas now. They have to cancel their trip. Don't worry about Juliet.
The Humes are visiting Juliet.
It's not too late to cancel our travel arrangements. If that's what you want.
Juliet shakes her head.
I'm sure you like it here. It's very tranquil.
I've spoken to the matron. She promises to take extra special care of you.
And you can carry on with your studies while you convalesce.
It's for the good of your health, darling.
Cheer up, Elsie. 4 months. Fly by in no time.
Tears roll down Juliet's cheeks. Mr. and Mrs. Hume leave the hospital, passing patients coughing in wheelchairs. Outside, they drive off in their grey car. Juliet stands watching them from a window, pale and teary-eyed.
Juliet won't be allowed visitors for at least a couple of months, dear. I've booked you in for a chest x-ray, just to be on the safe side.
Thought I'd have a go at building the birdhouse on Saturday. Anybody want to give me a hand?
You used to love making things with Dad, Yvonne.
This evening I had a brainwave that Juliet and I should write to each other as Charles and Deborah. I wrote a 6-page letter as Charles and a 2-page letter as Paul. She has entered into the spirit of the thing greatly.
My dear Charles, I miss you and adore you in equal amounts and long for the day that we will be reunited. But as I languish here in this house of disease and decrepitude, my mind turns, with increasing frequency, to the problem of our son. Although only 10, Diello has thus far killed 57 people and shows no desire to stop. It worries me, Charles.
My dearest darling Deborah, affairs of state continue to occupy my time. I have to report that the lower classes are terrifically dull. Only yesterday, I was compelled to execute several peasants, just to alleviate the boredom. Diello insisted on coming along. In fact, he made such a fuss that I had to let him wield the axe himself. Heads did roll. Not just the prisoners, but the royal guard, my valet, and several unfortunate onlookers copped it as well.
Oh, Charles, I am despaired enough to put Diello in the hands of the Cardinal in the hope that a good dose of religion will set the young chap on the right path.
Hello again.
A clergyman.
How are you getting on? It must be awfully hard being away from your school chums. I've got something here that you might just like to have a look at.
A pamphlet entitled Jesus Loves You.
Unfortunately, the miracles of modern medicine can only go so far in combating an illness like TB. That's why I'm here, because with a
With an icy look in her eye, Juliet watches the clergyman's face as he preaches. She imagines one of her clay figures grabbing him.
Reach out, Juliet! Reach out for Jesus!
He's dragged to the chopping block and his head lopped off. Now Pauline bursts through the doors of the hospital.
Yvonne! Yvonne! Paul! Paul! Oh! I'm so happy to see you!
Don't get too close. She's still not 100%. Hello, Juliet.
Hello!
We brought you some fruit.
Oh, thank you so much.
Well, that's coming along nicely.
Oh, I'm the matron's favourite patient, and she showed me her special stitch. I love the colour. It's for you. Oh.
Pauline's mother, Honora, looks on with concern.
Goodness me, what a lot of letters. Huh? Are your parents enjoying their trip? Oh, there's a couple of unopened ones.
I'm saving them for a rainy day.
I know it's hard for you being in here, but it is for the good of your health.
They sent me off to the Bahamas for the good of my health. They sent me off to the Bay of Bloody Islands for the good of my health. I'm sorry, Mrs. Reaper. I'm feeling quite fatigued.
Well, we don't want to tire you out, dear.
Pauline gets up.
Oh, can't you stay a bit longer, Paul?
No, we've got a tram to catch Yvonne.
The two girls give each other a long, tight hug, then kiss each other on the mouth. Juliet watches her leave with a desolate look on her face. The new lodgers looking at Pauline's clay figures.
You know, this is quite something. You're damn clever. So, Deborah's married to Charles, and this chap Nicholas is her tennis instructor.
Yes, but there's nothing between them. Deborah would never go for a commoner. Nicholas has got his eye on Gina. An amazingly beautiful gypsy.
Looks like you, Yvonne.
Juliet made it.
This is really quite incredible. I bet you girls know the entire royal lineage for the last 5 centuries.
Oh, yes. It's all worked out.
The lodger sets down a figure, folds his arms, and looks at her.
You'll never guess what's happened.
What?
John has fallen in love with me.
That idiot boarder?
Yes.
How do you know? Did he tell you?
No. But it's so obvious.
Is that why you haven't replied to my last letter?
Oh. No, silly. I'm only teasing. He's only a stupid boy.
Now Pauline's fast asleep in her room, which is in a separate annex of the house. Someone peers through the window, then goes round to the red door and opens it. John steps inside.
Yvonne.
Pauline turns on the light and sits up.
What do you want?
I can't sleep. Can I borrow a book?
Shut the door.
He half smiles and shuts the door. Then he picks up a magazine from her chest of drawers.
This looks interesting.
Pauline just stares at him, frowning as he flicks through it.
Some of these knitting patterns look damn complicated. You tried the tea cosy?
She shakes her head.
It's damn cold, isn't it? Do you think I could hop into bed just for a minute? Just to warm up? My feet are like ice blocks.
Well, you should have worn your slippers.
Come on, Yvonne, I'll catch my death.
Just for a minute.
She shifts over in the single bed and John gets in beside her.
To think that so much could happen in so little time, caused by so few. A terrible tragedy has occurred.
Now, girls, it isn't O, it's E. And she goes, E, as if someone was jabbing a pin into her. Silly old trout.
I love you, Yvonne.
And then the history. We've got the senile old bat who goes, and Charles II met Nell Gwyn aboard a boat. And he was a wealthy young prince, and she was a pretty young thing, and these things do happen. God, it's no wonder I don't excel in history.
Do you love me as much as I love you?
Of course, my darling Nicholas.
My name's John.
Well, I like Nicholas much better.
You can call me anything you like.
He starts fumbling under the bedclothes.
What are you doing?
Nothing.
Oh, bloody...
Her father comes in. John emerges from under the bedclothes.
Go to the house.
John gets out of the bed and heads out of the annex without a word. Herbert stares at his daughter in fury.
You've broken my heart, Yvonne.
I lay there, mesmerised. It was just too frightful to believe. When I got up, I found Father had told Mother.
Coming to Lancaster Park this Saturday, Mr. Reaper?
Where's John? He said he'd walk with me.
John is no longer staying here.
Shot through this morning. Said his old mum had taken sick.
I had a nasty, foreboding feeling at first. But now I realise my crime was too frightful for an ordinary lecture.
From now on, you are sleeping in the house where we can keep an eye on you. If you think for 1 minute that your father and I will tolerate this kind of behaviour, you've got another thing coming. You're only 14. You're a child. What on earth is the matter with you, Yvonne? You know what can happen with boys. Don't you have any self-respect?
Can I go now?
Oh, you think you're such a clever little madam?
You had your father in tears last night. My God, what a disgrace you are. Shame me. Shame the family. You're nothing but a cheap little child.
Well, I guess I take after you then. You ran off with Dad when you're only 17. Nana Parker told me.
You're going to be late.
Pauline glares at her mother defiantly, then leaves.
I'm terribly cut up. I miss Nicholas terrifically. Mother thinks I will have nothing more to do with him, but little she knows.
It's the middle of the night and Pauline's climbing up the outside of a house. John comes to the window to let her in.
Nicholas was pleased that I was so early. We sat around and talked for an hour and then went to bed. I declined the invitation at first, but he became very masterful and I had no option. I discovered that I had not lost my virginity on Thursday night. However, there is no doubt whatsoever that I have now.
Pauline's lying underneath a panting John with a confused frown on her face. She closes her eyes and winces. She opens her eyes to find herself lying in a meadow full of flowers with a castle a short distance away. She gets up and makes her way over to the castle. Borovnia is engraved into the stone arch above the drawbridge. She steps inside the castle to find it filled with life-size versions of her clay figures. Mario singing in the middle of the marketplace. Pauline ducks under the legs of a jester on stilts. Then someone taps her on the shoulder.
Charles!
Gina! It's great to see you here.
Deborah!
She struggles her way through the clay figures.
Deborah!
Their faces become more and more distorted as in reality, John reaches his climax above her.
Diello!
Careful, Gina, we almost lost you.
Diello runs a figure through with his sword.
For you, my lady.
Deborah!
Juliet swings round to look at her.
You're crying. Don't be sad, Gina.
Yvonne! 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 I fell in the hitch, did I?
I've got to go home.
I love you so much.
Pauline sits up and a tear trickles down her cheek. Now at the hospital, Juliet's dressed and ready to leave. Juliet and Pauline are sitting in the back of the Humes car.
They're living among two dutiful daughters. Of a man who possesses two beautiful daughters. You cannot know nor yet try to guess the sweet soothingness of their caress. The outstanding genius of this pair is understood by few. They are so rare.
Mummy!
Oh, darling!
Hello.
Welcome home.
Yvonne! Stop! I still love you!
Compared with these two, every man is a fool. The world is most honored that they should deign to rule, and I worship the power of these lovely two. With that adoring love known to so few.
Yvonne!
In the castle, Diello hides in wait for Nicholas behind a wall. At the drawbridge, Nicholas looks down and sees a gold ring inlaid with a jewel. He reaches down to pick it up.
Pretty.
Diello lowers the portcullis so it impales him, and the ring falls from his hand, loosening the jewel.
'Tis indeed a miracle, one must feel, that two such heavenly creatures are real. Hatred burning bright in the brown eyes with enemies for fuel. Icy scorn glitters in the grey eyes, contemptuous and cruel. Why are men such fools? They will not realize the wisdom that is hidden behind those strange eyes. And these wonderful people are you and I.
Juliet's father finds the two girls lying arm in arm in bed together, asleep.
Mrs. Reaper, may I come in?
Yes, of course.
Henry steps inside.
Thank you. Your daughters, an imaginative and spirited girl.
Look, if she's spending too much time at your house, you only need to say, all those nights that she spends over, she's assured us that you don't mind.
It's rather more complicated than that. Since Mrs. Hume and I returned home, Juliet's been behaving in a rather disturbed manner. Surliness, short temper, general irritability, most uncharacteristic.
You sure I can't tempt you to a nice sherry, Dr. Hume?
No, thank you. The thing is,
Yvonne hasn't been herself either. Locking herself away in a room, endlessly writing.
My wife and I feel that the friendship is unhealthy.
No arguments there, Dr. Hume. All that time inside working on those novels of theirs, they don't get any fresh air or exercise.
I'm not sure what you mean, Dr. Hume.
Your daughter appears to have formed a rather unwholesome attachment to Juliet.
What's she done?
Done anything. It's the intensity of the friendship that concerns me. I think we should avert trouble before it starts. Now, Dr. Bennett's a good friend of mine. He's a general physician, but he has some expertise in child psychology. If Pauline is indeed developing in a rather wayward fashion, Dr. Bennett is the ideal man to set her back on track.
What about your studies? Are you enjoying school? Are you happy at home?
Pauline sits looking sullen.
Answer Dr. Bennett, Yvonne. Yvonne?
Mrs. Reaper, perhaps you wouldn't mind waiting outside.
Pauline's mother gets up and leaves the doctor's office.
Do you like your mother?
No.
And why is that?
She nags me.
And that's why you like to stay with the Humes? Or is it because you want to be with Juliet? Do you like girls?
No.
Why not?
They're silly.
But Juliet's not silly.
No.
Yvonne, there's nothing wrong with having a close friend. But sometimes things can get too friendly. Such associations can lead to trouble. It isn't good to have just one friend. My wife and I have several friends, and we enjoy seeing them on a regular basis, and it's all perfectly healthy. Perhaps you could think about spending more time with boys.
Pauline imagines Diello impaling the doctor from behind with a sword.
Bloody fool.
Now Pauline emerges from the doctor's office.
Mrs. Reaper.
She heads into his office.
Homosexuality.
Oh. I agree, Mrs. Reaper, it's not a pleasant word. But let us not panic unduly. This condition is often a passing phase with girls of Yvonne's age.
But she's always been a normal, happy child.
Oh, it can strike at any time, and adolescents are particularly vulnerable.
What about the vomiting? She's lost a lot of weight.
Physically, I can find nothing wrong. I've checked for TB and she's clear. I can only attribute her weight loss to her mental disorder. Look, Mrs. Reaper, try not to worry too much. Yvonne's young and strong, and she's got a loving family behind her. Chances are she'll grow out of it. If not, well, medical science is progressing in leaps and bounds. There could be a breakthrough at any time.
Oh. Mother woke me this morning and started lecturing me before I was properly awake, which I thought was somewhat unfair. She has brought up the worst possible threat now. She said that if my health did not improve, I could never see the Humes again. The thought is too dreadful. Life would be unbearable without Deborah. I wish I could die. This is not an idle or temporary impulse. I have decided over the last 2 or 3 weeks that it would be the best thing that could happen altogether. And the thought of death is not fearsome. Oh, thank you!
Oh, Wendy. Oh, I've got myself a pair of socks.
Christmas, and Pauline sits huddled alone while the rest of the family open their presents. Her mother comes over to her.
Is it hurting, dear? Your leg? Have you got pain?
Pauline shakes her head and unwraps her present, a 1954 handy diary.
My New Year's resolution is a far more selfish one than last year. It is to make my motto, eat, drink and be merry, for tomorrow you may be dead.
She stomps through the school corridor with a scowl on her face.
Ready? Smile!
Only Pauline refuses to smile for the school photo. At home, her mother comes into her room.
This arrived today, Yvonne.
My name is Gina.
It's a letter from the school. From Miss Stewart.
What does old Stew want?
She says the standard of your work is slipping. At this rate, she doesn't think you'll get school certificate.
Who cares?
I care. And your father cares. We want you to get a good education.
I'm educating myself.
You're failing English! You used to be the top of the class!
I'm doing my own writing!
Don't think these stories are going to get you school certificates. You don't seriously think anyone's going to publish them.
What would you know? You wouldn't know the first thing about writing. You're the most ignorant person I've ever met.
You're rude. Rude and insolent. I don't think I should keep a horrid little child like you in school a minute longer.
I don't want to be in bloody school.
All right, well, you go out there. You go out there and get a job, and you damn well pay your own way.
Her mother strides out, and Pauline takes out one of her records. Now she's working in a typing pool. Later, she sits in the bath, hands wrapped around her knees, looking utterly desolate.
I think I'm going crazy.
No, you're not, Gina. It's everyone else who's bonkers.
Let's go overseas.
You mean travel by ourselves?
Pauline nods.
Where shall we go? Not the Bahamas, it's bloody awful.
As Juliet ponders, Pauline stares at her wretchedly.
Of course!
It's so obvious.
I know. I'll lean back and put my hair on my shoulder. Then I'll look just like Veronica Lee. Oh, great. Stay still or else they'll be blurry. Oh, well, hurry up. It's freezing. Well, just a couple more. I know. I'll lean forward now and show more cleavage.
Henry's listening at the door.
Those girls are up to something in the bathroom. I think they're taking photographs of each other.
Just leave them alone, Henry.
I'm prepared to tolerate that Reaper girl's presence, but I will not stand for any... hanky-panky.
I'm sure it's all perfectly innocent.
Now the girls are piling ornaments into a pillowcase.
I'm sure they'll notice things missing.
They'll blame the bloody housekeeper. She nicks stuff all the time.
This lot's got to be worth 50 quid. I can try my father's safe. I'm sure I can get the keys to his office. That's great. We'll have the fare in no time.
I rose at 5:30 this morning and did all the housework before 8 o'clock, including taking Wendy her breakfast in bed. I feel very pleased with myself on the whole, and also the future. We are so brilliantly clever.
Just washing my hair now, Laurie. Won't be a moment.
She's writing as she lies in the bath.
Is she still in there? Come on, Yvonne.
You've had enough time. Yvonne!
Yes.
You open up this door right now.
I'm bloody dressing as fast as I can, for God's sake.
Open this door!
Mother gave me a fearful lecture along the usual strain. I rang Deborah immediately as I had to tell someone sympathetic how I loathed Mother.
As her mother lectures her, Pauline watches her face moving, but doesn't hear any of the words. She stares at her coldly. Juliet's house is in darkness. 23rd of April, 1954. Juliet makes her way along the darkened landing. She stops and listens outside her parents' door. She bursts in to find her mother in bed with one of her clients.
The balloon has gone up.
What on earth are you talking about?
It's going to cost you £100 as I'm blabbing to Daddy.
Mr. Perry and I are in love, Juliet.
Hilda.
Your father knows about us. Until other arrangements can be made, we've decided to live together as a threesome.
I don't care what you do. Paul and I are going to Hollywood. They're desperately keen to sign us up. We're going to be film stars.
What are you talking about?
It's all arranged. We don't need your bloody £100 anyway, so stick it up your bottom!
Pauline's cycling in the rain.
Deborah told me the stupendous news. I'm going out to Ireland as we've much to talk over.
Hello?
She races up the stairs in Juliet's house.
Deborah was still in bed when I arrived.
Henry finds them hugging.
Dr. Hume asked us to come into the lounge to have a talk with him.
Hilda is smoking. Pauline helps Juliet in with a blanket wrapped around her shoulders. She stares at her mother through tear-streaked eyes.
Your mother and I are getting divorced.
Juliet huddles into Pauline's arms.
The shock is too great to have penetrated my mind. It is so incredible. Poor father.
Dr. Hume was absolutely kind and understanding. He said we must tell him everything about our going to America. He was both hope-giving and depressing. We talked for a long time, and Deborah and I were near tears by the time it was over. What is to be the future now? We may all be going to Italy and dozens of other places, or not at all. We none of us know where we are, and a good deal depends on chance.
Pauline hugs Juliet and leaves the house, setting off on her bicycle through the pouring rain.
Dr. Hume is the noblest and most wonderful person I have ever known of. One thing Deborah and I are sticking to. Through everything, we sink or swim together.
Pauline shuts her diary. Henry to Juliet.
Your mother and I have talked things over, and we've made some decisions. I'm resigning from the university, and I'll be taking up a position back in England.
But, Daddy, you can't just leave me here with Mother.
We thought it best if you accompany your father.
Is Gina coming too?
Of course not.
I'm not going to England without Gina!
You're not going to England, darling.
I'm leaving you in South Africa with Auntie Ina.
That chest of yours isn't getting any better. A warmer climate is just what you need.
For the good of your health.
The Humes will look after me. They want me to live with them.
Don't be so ridiculous. You're our daughter. You belong here with us.
I belong with Deborah. We're going to South Africa.
You're not going anywhere. You're 15 years old, Yvonne.
You have to let me go.
We'll talk about this when you've calmed down.
I felt thoroughly depressed and even quite seriously considered committing suicide. Life seemed so much not worth the living. Death's such an easy way out.
Love, you can still write to each other.
Anger against Mother boiled up inside me, as it is she who is one of the main obstacles in my path. Suddenly, a means of ridding myself of this obstacle occurred to me. If she were to die...
I cannot begin to attempt to measure the inestimable value of Dr. Hume's contributions to Canterbury College, both social and official. We wish both him and Mrs. Hume all the best for the future.
A portrait of Henry is unveiled. Hilda kisses her husband. Now Pauline's on the phone to Juliet.
Just another £30 and we've got the fare.
It's no bloody good. I went to the passport office today. They won't give me one till I'm 20.
But that's not true. I've got one.
No. I need my sodding parents' consent.
Oh, don't cry, Gina. Gina, please don't cry. We're not going to be separated. We're not.
They can't make us.
They can't. They can't.
They're not.
Oh, please, Owen. I hate you.
Pauline's mother comes up behind her, looking distraught.
Yvonne. Don't be like this, love.
Pauline looks at her with pure hatred in her eyes.
I did not tell Deborah of my plans for removing Mother. I have made no decision yet, as the last fate I wish to meet is one in a borstal. I am trying to think of some way.
I've just had Tilda Hume on the telephone.
What now?
She says Juliet's in a terrible state. She's uncontrollable. I've told her Pauline isn't going to South Africa. She refuses to accept it. Well, I expect you've heard the same from your own daughter.
Yvonne hasn't spoken to me for nearly 2 weeks.
Yes. Well, it hasn't been an easy time for any of us, Mrs. Reaper.
She's cut us out of her life, Mrs. Hume. It's been causing her mother and I a lot of worry.
What I'm suggesting is that we let the girls spend these last 3 weeks together. We would like Pauline to come and stay with Juliet until she leaves.
Is that a good idea?
He puts his hand on his wife's shoulder.
Perhaps I could telephone you tonight, Mrs. Hume.
Yes, yes, of course.
He escorts Hilda out, leaving his wife sobbing in an armchair. 11th of June 1954, Pauline steps into the Humes house carrying a suitcase. As she looks up the stairs, she sees Juliet appear in a glamorous dress and sweep downstairs towards her, looking like a film starlet. They start to dance around the hall together. Mario singing in Juliet's living room.
When you are in love, it's the loveliest night of the year. Stars twinkle above.
Suddenly, the living room turns into Pauline's imaginary castle. Figures are dancing all around them. Juliet dances with Charles while Pauline dances with Diello.
We realise why Deborah and I have such extraordinary telepathy and why people treat us and look at us the way they do. It is because we are mad. We are both stark raving mad. The cast of the Saints are mad too. Dr. Hume is mad. As mad as a march hare.
Axes fall, then a huge banner is unfurled with the word mad written on it. Juliet and Pauline are at the cinema. They're watching a black and white film with a man running through a sewer. Orson Welles is the leading man.
It was the first time I had ever seen it. Deborah had always told me how hideous he was.
Is that you? You're through, Harry. Come out. You haven't got a chance this way. What do you want? You might as well give up.
It is appalling. He is dreadful. I have never in my life seen anything in the same category of hideousness, but I adore him.
Now the girls are leaving the cinema. They see Orson Welles standing in the shadows waiting for them. They run off down an alleyway and hide behind a corner. Then they turn to see him right behind them. They back away from him, but he's right behind them again. They race back to Juliet's house and run up the stairs. Orson's shadow's on the wall behind them. Then he's waiting in Juliet's bedroom. They run for the other door, but it's locked. Orson takes off his hat and moves towards them, just as they manage to escape onto the balcony. He appears on the balcony, so they hurry back into Juliet's bedroom.
Open the door.
They fall onto the bed, hysterical with laughter.
We talked for some time about it, getting ourselves more and more excited. We enacted how each saint would make love in bed.
Lying on top of Juliet, Pauline moves down towards her, and their lips meet gently and tenderly. Juliet closes her eyes as they kiss. Then Pauline moves away and stares down at her. Suddenly she turns into Orson. He places a gloved hand on Juliet's throat and begins to kiss her neck. Now Diello's slashing away with his sword as Pauline lies back on the bed. He strokes her face, then picks her up and ravishes her against the wall of the castle. Juliet stares down at Pauline. Both girls are naked. She leans down and kisses her.
It's been a hectic night going through the saints. It was wonderful, heavenly, beautiful, and ours. We felt satisfied indeed. We have now learned the peace of the thing called bliss, the joy of the thing called sin.
They're in the bath together, in the darkened bathroom. Juliet's eyes are brimming with tears.
I'm coming with you.
Yes.
I know what to do about Mother. We don't want to go to too much trouble. Some sort of accident. People die every day.
Now they're hand in hand in the sunshine, wearing pretty summer dresses.
Our main idea for the day was to moider Mother. This notion is not a new one, but this time it is a definite plan which we intend to carry out. We have worked it out carefully and are both thrilled by the idea. Naturally, we feel a trifle nervous, but the pleasure of anticipation is great.
They're burning all their Mario Lanza records on a bonfire.
Only the best people fight against all obstacles in pursuit of happiness.
Flames lick around Mario's face on one of the record sleeves.
We both spent last night having a simply wonderful time in every possible way. I was picked up at 2 p.m. I've been very sweet and good. I have worked out a little more of our plan. Peculiarly enough, I have no qualms of conscience. I rose late and helped Mother vigorously this morning. Deborah rang and we decided to use a rock and a stocking rather than a sandbag. We discussed the moider fully. I feel very keyed up as though I were planning a surprise party. Mother has fallen in with everything beautifully, and the happy event is to take place tomorrow afternoon. Next time I write in this diary, Mother will be dead. How odd. Yet how pleasing.
Juliet is singing on her balcony by the light of a beautiful sunrise. She's wearing bright red lipstick and her eyes are brimming over with tears. In black and white, the two girls run along the deck of the ferry.
Mummy! Mummy!
Hilda and Herbert turn round. They hug the two girls. Then Pauline and Juliet kiss. Both Pauline and Juliet wake up. It's nearly 7:20 in the morning. In her diary on the 22nd of June, Pauline writes, "The day of the happy event."
I'm writing a little of this up on the morning before the death. I felt very excited and the night before Christmas-ish last night. I am about to rise.
Juliet rushes round to a pile of bricks outside her house. She selects a half brick and wraps it in newspaper.
Juliet! Hurry up!
She quickly stuffs it into her satchel.
Thought I'd lost you.
She looks at her mother, who turns away.
Mummy!
She runs to give her a hug.
Oh. You've got roses in your cheeks. Oh, I haven't seen that in such a long time.
Oh, bye. Have a lovely time, darling. I will. I'm so looking forward to it.
Juliet gets into the car. As her father puts his hand on the steering wheel, his watch is exposed. The time is just gone 10:55. Now he drops Juliet off.
Bye, Daddy! See you tonight!
She heads into the shop. It's 11:05. Pauline is frantically buttering slices of bread. Honora looks across at her from the kitchen sink.
Whoa, 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 there's enough there to feed an army.
Hello.
Hello, Juliet.
Juliet puts a brown paper bag down on the table and takes off her coat.
Oh, what a nice outfit.
Thank you. I bought it especially, Mrs. Reaper.
Oh.
Honora bends over to put some sausage rolls into the oven and the two girls stand behind her, staring. They glance at each other, then Juliet reaches behind and picks up the brown paper bag.
Fruit. Oh, pop them in a bowl.
Honora busies herself, moving Juliet's satchel onto an empty chair.
Lescott's news, Deborah. I wrote the first 10 pages of my opera last night. All right, then.
The girls head out. Then Pauline rushes back to grab Juliet's satchel. Upstairs in the bedroom, Juliet is pacing back and forth.
Oh, do you feel all sweaty? Oh, I feel sweaty.
Pauline takes a stocking from her drawer and starts to wrap the half brick in it.
It's a three-act story with a tragic end.
Your mother is rather a miserable woman, isn't she?
I thought for hours about whether Carmelita should accept Bernard's marriage proposal.
I think she knows what's going to happen. She doesn't appear to bear us any grudge.
But in the end, I decided against it. I thought it would spoil all their fun.
Affairs are much more exciting than marriages, as Mummy can testify.
Pauline slips the stocking-wrapped brick into Juliet's satchel and holds it on her lap. Now they're eating with the family.
It's true. He was spotted in the lingerie department, eh, Wendy?
There's nothing wrong with Sir Edmund Hillary buying underwear for his wife. He was a very nice man.
I bet it was thermal underwear.
I bet he pitches a tent in the middle of their bedroom. And they have to pretend to be on a mountain.
That's it, Bond.
That man's a credit to the nation.
Right, who's going to help me clear away?
I will, Mum. Anything to get away from Laurel and Hardy.
I'd better be getting back. Bye, love.
Bye.
Have a nice outing, you lot.
Goodbye, dear.
Bye, Mr. Reaper.
Well, better make myself a bit more presentable.
Honora heads off. It's approaching 1:15. Now a bus climbs a steep hill. A sign in its window reads Victoria Park. It makes its way along a road overlooking lush expanses of trees. Honora is sitting near the rear of the bus, with Pauline and Juliet sitting just behind her on the back seat. Pauline looks solemn and glances across at Juliet, who gives her a nervous smile. Now they're walking.
Isn't it beautiful?
Let's go for a walk down here.
Come on, Mummy.
Oh, no, I'd like a cup of tea first. Come on.
Pauline scowls, then follows Honora and Juliet to a single-storey white building with a pale green roof. Inside the tea room, a woman takes some empty bottles of pop from the table and heads between some curtains. Honora hungrily eyes the last cream scone on the cake stand.
You have it.
Oh, no, I'm watching my figure.
But you're not fat, Mrs. Reaper.
Oh, well, I've put on a lot of weight over Christmas.
It's just gone 3:00.
Go on, Mum. Treat yourself.
All right.
Pauline watches coldly, sipping her drink as her mother smiles and cuts the scone in two. Now Pauline leads the way through a gap in a hedgerow, down some rocks and onto a path. Juliet and Honora stop to admire the view. The party make their way along the path leading through the woods. Pauline is ahead with the satchel containing the half brick at her side. She wears a sullen expression. As she walks, Juliet anxiously rubs her fingers. They reach a tricky point on the path, and Pauline pauses and offers her hand to her mother, helping her down. Honora encourages Pauline to continue, and she does so, her sandals treading in the thick, sticky mud underfoot. Honora tries to avoid the quagmire, stepping delicately over the worst of it. Juliet steps behind her. The two of them walk together, talking, while Pauline stays out in front. Pauline walks up onto a slight slope on the path, then continues trudging onward. Juliet is still rubbing her hands together. She glances ahead, looking afraid. The three of them are now walking in single file. As they pass a tree, Juliet reaches out and runs her hand along a dry branch. The muddy path is strewn with leaves. Pauline glances back over her shoulder and frowns at Juliet with intent. When Juliet doesn't immediately respond, Pauline gives her another, more urgent look. Juliet reaches into her pocket and drops something from it onto the ground.
Yvonne, love, we should be going back. We don't want to miss the bus. Juliet, you button up your coat, you get a chill.
Juliet turns back and starts fumbling with her coat buttons. Pauline walks up behind Honora.
Look, Mother.
The jewel Juliet dropped from her pocket is twinkling on the ground. Honora crouches down to get it. At the same time, Pauline takes the half-brick out of her satchel, winding the stocking around her hand. She steels herself and then brings it down on her mother's head with all her strength.
Gina! Hurry!
Hanara falls to the ground, her face covered in blood. She looks pleadingly at Juliet, but she just takes the brick from Pauline's hand and slams it down onto Hanara's head again and again while Pauline holds the screaming woman down. In black and white, Pauline is sobbing as Juliet calls to her from the railings of a ferry.
Gina! Don't look at me! I'm coming! Don't go!
The ferry starts to move away.
He can't!
Pauline remains helplessly on the dockside. Juliet's parents come to their daughter's side and try to coax her away, but she's inconsolable. She gazes out across the widening divide between her and Pauline, looking racked by grief.
Sorry.
Pauline is overwhelmed with tears. The images fade to black. In the hours following Hanara's murder,
when you walk through a storm, keep your chin up high and don't be afraid.
After Pauline's arrest, it was discovered that Hanara and Herbert Reaper had never married. Pauline was therefore charged under her mother's maiden name of Parker. In August 1954, a plea of insanity was rejected by the jury in the Christchurch Supreme Court trial, and Pauline Parker and Juliet Hume were found guilty of murder. Too young for the death penalty, they were sent to separate prisons to be detained at Her Majesty's pleasure. Juliet was released in November 1959 and immediately left New Zealand to join her mother overseas. Pauline was released 2 weeks later but remained in New Zealand on parole until 1965. It was a condition of their release that they never meet again.